He's had success in the past. He's now launched this company. They've raised about $2.4 million. They have a lot of customers who are paying nothing but really like the tool. He's right now in the beautiful stage of putting up that paywall, seeing if he can get people to convert at about $1.50 per seat. The average customer is hoping to onboard at somewhere between 300, 400 seats. So call it $500, $600 per month in MR and revenue. Again, we'll see if how it grows. I'd love to have him on again in the future. But
this is episode 731 coming up. Tomorrow morning, we reveal a tool that many unicorn companies like Airbnb are using. It's called Jumio. You won't believe how much money they're making. But first, here's today's episode.
This is The Top, where I interview entrepreneurs who are number one or number two in their industry in terms of revenue or customer base. You'll learn how much revenue they're making, what their marketing funnel looks like, and how many customers they have.
I'm now at $20,000 per talk.
5 and 6 million.
He is hell-bent on global domination.
We just broke our 100,000 unit sold mark.
And I'm your host, Nathan Latka. Hello, everyone. My guest today is Paul Wash. He's the founder and CEO of a company called MetaCert, the world's most established security company in team collaboration and messaging services. He's holder of a full patent for in-app URL security. His first company generated $2.2 million in year one, and he's also the owner of a Michelin star Indian restaurant. Paul, are you ready to take us to the top?
I sure am.
Where's your Indian food? It should be all over your desk right now. You should be cross-promoting your stuff, you know?
Yeah. I'm not involved in the restaurant anymore. So that's in Dublin, Ireland. So it would be cold by the time it gets here to California.
That's funny. Okay, so tell me about. I'm going to read this again. So, most established security company in team collaboration and messaging services. That's a big claim. How do you measure that? How do you back that up?
Well, it's actually pretty easy because team collaboration and messaging services is only a few years old from a kind of a vertical. Industry perspective, and none of the established legacy security companies have built any products or services specific to those services.
Like who? Like Symantec?
Yes, Symantec, McAfee, Kaspersky, even the mobile app securities like Lookout, or the social media security companies like ZeroFox. They're all focused on either very specific app-based security or network security. Whereas we're basing our security on the premise that people are out and about using apps like Slack, HipChat, Messenger, Skype, without having their traditional network security because, you know, they're on 3G network or they're working from home. Our security is baked right into the service. And so we're very specific in our niche, which is to protect companies and people that use those services.
So how does it work? If I'm working for 3G on the post-it note division, I'm at home working on my personal computer, I log into the Slack account, and how's MetaCert work?
Well, it literally takes 20 seconds to install, and then it gets baked into the service. It doesn't matter what platform or device you use. It's when you go to open a web link inside a channel or a room, and before it opens up the website, actually what happens is it checks to see if it's safe. So it checks MetaCert's database of classified URLs. And if it's safe, if it's not classified as malware, phishing, XXX or alt-right or fake news, which are some of the newest categories we've added, if it's safe, then nothing happens, right? It just runs silently in the background. But if it's one of those links that you care about, an alert is sent to the user to say, and the channel to say, this website is this kind of content. You may wish to proceed with caution.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. No, that was a great example.
It just alerts you to what's on the other end of the link before you actually open it, because there are links that will open up and install malware, spyware, ransomware on your device, and then that kind of leads to all kinds of problems.
How do you make sure your database isn't compromised?
Well, we have our own security protocols in place to make sure it's not compromised, but to make sure that it's up to date, we have our own crawlers and threat intelligence system. In fact, we're probably the only small company in the world that has its own threat intelligence system, because in the security world, only a small number of them, like Bluecoat, WebSense, Symantec, only a small number have their own kind of databases of classified URLs. The rest of the cybersecurity companies license that data for their own products. So we spent a few years building that system. And now we have the biggest database of classified URLs in the world by a lot.
And you're a money guy, you're a business guy. How do you make money?
We are actually just starting now to convert our customers. Our customers include companies like IBM, F5, UCLA.
These are paying customers.
So these are about to be converted because we've actually only...
So they're users.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I take stock with that. I've always believed that they're customers in the sense that even if they're not paying yet, we should think of them as customers, number one, because we want them to pay, and number two, we treat them with the same dignity and respect that we would a user. And so I don't particularly like the term user unless it's for a consumer-based product where you're talking about millions of users. But if you're talking about 1,000 big companies that are enterprise-sized companies using your product or service, and the only reason they're not paying is because you literally haven't asked them for money yet, that's because we spent the past 9 months iterating to get a good product and market fit. And now we believe we have that good product market fit. And now we're actually...
How do you know that? What signals? Because like the argument here is, well, you could have just done all this and they actually won't pay for it when push comes to shove.
They've started to pay. And also I've spoken to quite a few customers. In order to get that product fit, I spoke to a lot of customers to find out what it was that they liked and what it was that they actually didn't like. And importantly, what it was that they didn't realize our product did. Because not only does it alert you to dangerous links, we have this beautifully designed dashboard, which has a interface of every link and every file shared across your entire company. It tells you what room it was shared in, who shared it, and what time, and what category it is. Mm-hmm. Even if it's not security, it'll say, you know, 20% of links shared are to news websites. And that's actually useful insight, but it's also good for regulatory compliance for companies that care about that. But the vast majority of our customers didn't even know that they had it. Mm-hmm. So actually updating
the chat. So how many of these people are actually paying you money right now?
I don't want to go into necessarily who's paying because I have...
Not who. I'm trying to get how many.
I would say less than 5% are paying.
Okay.
But that's turning every day. And that's only because literally we only turned on the payment system last week. Mm-hmm. So these are people who are geared up to pay. I know you're revenue focused and I would
No, I'm not always revenue focused. But what I also try and understand is in the life cycle of a company, how does a founder make a decision when to start making money? Some people had a big exit. They can afford to basically subsidize their business for the first 3 years with no revenue. Some people have pre-sell, right? So what was your situation? How have you supported yourself the past, you know, while you've been building with no revenue?
That's a good point. Well, there's two questions there. First of all, we've supported ourselves through funding. We've had two seed fund rounds, both of them 1.2 million.
So 2.4 total.
1.2, so 2.4 in total. But that's a good point because actually we convened the board probably three times in about 6 weeks, about a month ago, to sit down and decide, okay, in order to get that Series A in 12 months' time, what is it that Series A investors are going to look for? Is it going to be a huge number of customers, or is it going to be a moderate amount of paying customers, of which some are very big companies? And so it's typically difficult for a SaaS-based B2B business to try and get it right in terms of, hey, do I want to attract 1,000 customers a week and convert 10 of them, or do I want to attract 100 hot leads and convert 5? You know, so conversion rates and number of customers and the amount of revenue you're getting is kind of this, it's almost like a triangle. Which one do you go for? So we've been monitoring all of our data for the past few weeks to find out what that looks like. Mm-hmm. And what is it that is the value in MetaCert? And we believe it's not necessarily a huge number of non-paying customers. What it will be is a decent number of customers, of which quite a few are paying customers, to demonstrate that they don't want a free product. They actually care about it enough to pay. And you know what's important as well? We're not talking about a weather chatbot or a horoscope or a travel chatbot where you just kind of install it in one or two channels and play around with it. MetaCert, for almost every customer, is installed across every one of their channels or rooms. And so that means they're actually taking a risk because in itself, that's a privacy risk.
Yeah, but what if they're doing that because it's free? See, this is the problem. Like, your usage data could be lying to you because it's a free product.
Well, no, two things. One is they wouldn't just install a security integration across all the channels or rooms because it's a free product. The small companies might, but the big companies would not, because they would spend a considerable amount of time doing their due diligence on the services that they want. Mm-hmm. The second thing is, we've spoken to quite a few customers to find out when it was totally free, when we didn't know when we were going to charge. We asked them, what is it about the service that you like? What is it that you would like to change? And then also, what is it we would need to do to encourage you to pay for this service? And so all of that work has almost been, it's been completed. Obviously, we won't stop iterating. But that amount of work, all we did for the past 3 months was double down on product iteration as opposed to building out and continuing to build the technology and the API.
So how, when you do introduce pricing, how are you going to make money? Is it SaaS business, seat-based, or what?
Yeah, well, actually, it was introduced. So every customer that installed our chatbot or integration did so by first looking at the pricing model. So it's not like it was just a free website and, hey, sometime in the future we're going to charge you. Every one of them chose which pricing plan they wanted. So there was an expectation there that they were going to pay after a 7-day free trial. However, we didn't have the payment system in place at the time. So we only have that in place in the last couple of weeks, last week. So it's a SaaS-based model. Currently, it is $1.50 per user per month. But having spoken to a bunch of customers, we're going to break out the security alerts to the analytics, and we will charge. That hasn't been rolled out, but that will be 50 cents per user per month for the security alerts and $1 per user per month for the analytics dashboard. Mm-hmm.
So what is the, you said some of these people have converted, right?
Yep.
So what's the average current paying customer paying you on average per month? Like the average, and obviously this is starting, you haven't had a chance to upsell them yet because you just turned this thing on. But what's the average starting?
Exactly. The average is a company with around 350 users. Okay. So that could be anything from a company with a couple of thousand employees right up to IBM.
So just to be clear, at 350 seats and 150 a seat, you're talking 500, 600 bucks a month is the average starting point.
Yeah.
Okay. And how many total, you call them customers, I call them users because they're not paying. So how many customers or users do you currently have on the platform that have installed it?
We have approximately 1,200 across Slack and HipChat, and that is with zero inbound and zero outbound marketing. Again, we wanted to get that product market fit. We turned that on. We turned on.
Well, how do you get a fit with no marketing?
Sorry?
How do you get a fit with no marketing? How'd the first person learn about you?
Well, almost all the traffic comes from Slack and HipChat. So we're actually we're listed in the curated list of brilliant bots on Slack. So
okay, so that's outbound, right? That's a good placement. You had to negotiate to get that spot, and that's how you get new users. You have to pay for it.
Well, we didn't negotiate. They did it by themselves because they really like what MetaCert offers to the platform. And the second thing is with HipChat, they blogged about us numerous times about one of the top 30 integrations for their platform. Again, when I say zero, it's like extremely none. It's like extremely little. I used to be a blogger back
extremely
in the early
little
days.
What? Oh, you mean in terms of paid acquisition?
Promotion. Yeah. I mean, I used to be a blogger back in the early days, so I can turn on the content marketing strategy and get the blog going and bring the traffic into our website based on the peripheral conversation that we want to have around the services. Also, I would say one of the challenges we have is educating companies of the importance of adding security to those platforms, because every single company we speak to that doesn't have MetaCert installed thinks that those platforms are protecting them from malicious links when they're not.
Yeah, I mean, so I see this with a lot of security companies I've had on. Like, they don't get a huge boost in sales until CNN's posting one morning that Putin hacked everybody, right? And then they literally, it's a direct correlation, right? That fear-mongering drives an increase in sales of their seats for their product. Noby4 is a company I just had on, right? They're about to hit $100 million run rate because of this.
You'd be surprised, actually. I haven't spoken to companies with just 7 users. I've asked them, I've said, why did you install MetaCert? And they said, well, we went looking for security because we think it's important. So you'd be surprised by the number of people who actually, there's a lot of people who don't care about security. It's not the most interesting topic in the world. But you would be surprised by the number of companies and people who actually do care about security, because it's almost like for them, for some people, it's regulatory compliance. For others, it's an insurance certificate. For others, it's they genuinely believe that an attack could happen. And also, most IT professionals are more concerned about insider threats than they are external hacks.
Yeah, I mean, but you just articulated to me one of your issues is educating the market about the security threats, right? Which means everyone does not understand what it exists, right?
We have to have some challenges. Can't say we don't have any challenges.
Well, I mean, look, the thing I struggle with thinking about this, like you just mentioned, like one of the things you haven't turned on the paywall is because you just want to, it's taken you a while to build the URL database and build a great product. But, and now that you feel like there's value delivered and you have these users, you're turning on the paywall about a week ago. But one of the things you just articulated was when you convened the board, they said, well, how are we going to raise a Series A? And they said, well, we have to get revenue. And that seemed to be your driver about why you're turning on revenue now. It can't always be both ways.
It wasn't why we turned on revenue. That was two different things. So first of all, what we convened to discuss was what is the value proposition of MetaCert? Because with some companies, it could be X number of users or X number of big customers with zero revenue, right? There's a lot of companies out there that raise many rounds and float on the stock market with zero revenue. And that's okay because
if you can find a B2B SaaS company with no revenue that is floating on the, no sales, floating on the stock market, you would shock me. I don't know that one exists.
There are companies that will...
Name one.
I'll have to think about that, actually. You've actually put me on the spot. But when you move from customers to users, I don't know of any SaaS company in a space similar to ours that would refer to them as users. They refer to them as seats or customers.
Yeah, but they're not
users
paying.
Users is when you're talking about large numbers of users of usually a consumer-based product. And then also, so with the... We didn't go from tweaking the system to generate revenue. Building the platform was a significant effort that took a few years. Then, of course, we did continue to tweak that whilst building the products that sat on top of the platforms. And we didn't want to turn on the revenue at that time for two reasons. One, we're a startup. So by doing that, it involved a lot of work and it detracted from iterating the product.
Look,
and improving
Paul, there's
the product.
Always a reason not to turn on revenue, but like that's the ultimate lie detector test with people that are using you for free to see if they're going to, like, you can actually build a real business on this thing.
Yeah, but I told you already that there was a period of time where I spoke to a lot of customers. It wasn't a case of building the technology, build the product, turn on the revenue.
Yeah, but customers can lie to you. Like, you're a convincing guy. I can tell just by how our interview is going. I've done the same thing. And people, you can convince people to tell you, yes, I would pay for this. But when you actually ask them to whip out their card, they don't whip it out.
To a degree, that's true, but also I've built a really good relationship with a quite number of our customers to find out what... And ironically, we have a lot of security companies that use our security integrations to protect them while they're using those products.
Are they paying for that?
Well, now you're being facetious because I already told you that a small number of customers are paying.
Well, that's my... I'm not being facetious, though, Paul. I'm trying to get to the point of how you build a big business on this, because one of the things I see people do all the time is exactly what you're doing. You've had success. Like, you've done this before. Your first software company did millions in revenue. So you have capital put behind this thing. But how do you make sure that you're not being blinded by your past success in this new thing?
So here's what I would say. Rather than beat up somebody for not generating revenue right now or focusing on revenue, if you're concerned and you're aiming at the different stages of a company, you will recognize that you have to do a number of things, right? You have to, you build the tech, you build the product, you build the team, you get a product market fit before you try to scale. If you try to scale before you have a product fit, that's a big mistake that a lot of founders make, because you could build a big audience, get a lot of customers, and whether they're paying or not, they will leave if you don't have a product fit that they like, that solves a problem that they care about. So before doing that, I would actually say...
Before doing what? Scaling?
Before charging them, you should get a product fit.
See, I completely disagree with that. If you can't sell the idea and ask for a prepayment up front for something, it means everything you just articulated is cost. Like, no, get a fit, grow a team. Like,
there's two camps, right? There's two camps. There's an extraordinarily large amount of very respectable investors and entrepreneurs that actually agree with me that say, actually, it's important to get a good product fit before you try to scale.
I'm not saying before you scale, Paul. I'm saying before you get paying customers. You can get one person to pay you money and say, great, in 6 months, we're going to deliver this product to make sure you're onto a good idea. What I'm trying to get is into your psyche about why you've decided not to put and get that validation early. And you even call your users customers. So like, but they're not customers because they're not paying. So that's what I'm trying to get into is the psychology.
Well, we need to disagree on whether you call them customers or not. The CEO of Starbucks, actually, after I said it many years ago that I always refer to them as customers. The CEO, one of the first things he told Jack Dorsey when he joined the board of Twitter was that you're going to put a dollar into this tip jar for every time you call somebody a user. They're actually customers. So I actually have the same mentality because it means you talk to them and you speak to them differently to as if they were users.
You can treat them, treat them like a customer. But when push comes to shove, if I have 20 million people that I'm treating like a customer, but they're not paying me anything, I have no business.
I think you and I need to just disagree because you're not right. I think I'm right. You think you're right. So we just have to disagree on whether you call somebody a customer or not, right?
Because yeah, so let's get off the syntax, right? Let's just get to the meaning of dollars coming in the business. So what if you release this pay? Look, you have a week's worth of data. What if you release this paywall to people and the people that told you yes and are using it and have it installed all over the place and have integrated with you don't start paying? How do you start looking at other ways to generate revenue?
If nobody pays, then we'll do what every other founder and startup would do, which is you iterate the product until you get that fit. If you've got a good fit, it is more likely that people are willing to pay. That's why you get a product fit. I'm not sure how many times I need to say that to you. When I say a product fit, that means I have got the evidence to substantiate an assertion of confidence that they should pay. They're not guaranteed to pay. And it'd be silly for me to say to you, these are actually all going to pay. They're not all going to pay. There's going to be a certain conversion rate. And when we've got that conversion rate decent, then we start with the inbound and outbound marketing to increase the number of visitors that come to our website. Because we have the product fit, it means that a higher degree of people are going to convert to paying customers. Also, it's down to whether or not somebody fundamentally believes security is important for messaging platforms and collaboration platforms. If somebody doesn't believe that, first of all, actually, if you don't think, not you, but metaphorically speaking, if somebody doesn't believe security is important, they're never going to think that it's going to be important enough for people to pay. I've given numerous classes or presentations at UC Berkeley, classes of entrepreneurs, and they've pretended to be VCs, and I've been the founder pitching to them. And a number of them will always say, I don't see why people would pay for this. And it boils down to the fact that they don't think security is a problem, right? So if you don't think security is a problem, then I have a different challenge, which is to explain to you why I think security is a challenge and why it's important.
Sure.
Then the next thing is whether or not you think it's a big enough market on Slack, HipChat, Microsoft for Teams, Cisco, Spark. If you don't think there are big market opportunities, that's another downer. Okay, move on to try and convince you with statistics as to why I think that's a big market opportunity by demonstrating to you the fact that if people are reducing their reliance on email in favor of those tools, then for me, it stands to reason that Proofpoint, which is one of the biggest email security companies in the world, if they're doing very well in that vertical, then it stands to reason that the cyber attacks are also going to move to those threat vectors of those platforms. And so if that's the case, Metasearch just happens to be the most established in the space, the best designed and executed product that you will ever see on any of those platforms. We have the biggest threat intelligence system in the world. And if you want to check the security of a link inside a mobile application, I own that full patent. So all of those ingredients lead us to believe that we have the right tools in place to make sure that we get the right product and market fit and we can charge customers for it. Am I guaranteed that everybody's going to pay for it? No, of course not. Do I believe that a great percentage of those will convert? Yes, I do. Had you spoken to me 3 months ago, 6 months ago, we'd be having a different conversation. If we had a podcast in 3 months' time and I said to you, oh, you know what, dude, this is conversion rate sucks. We don't have any paying customers. We're going to change. We're going to do something different. That's a different conversation. But we're at that point now where we're trying to get them to convert. So it's a little unfair for me to say I'm very bullish it's going to happen. And it's also very unfair for you to beat me and say, why aren't you getting paying customers? You've caught me at a time when we're going through that process right now. It's not
Which is, by the way, Paul, it's a beautiful time. All I'm saying is, like the example you gave in your room of role-playing VC versus founder, the proof point nobody can argue with is revenue. That's my point. That's all. That's nobody can argue with it. You have,
yes. It's not all, yeah, but you don't just, that's true, but you don't just jump to revenue. If you jump to revenue as a potential investor every time, you will lose out on a great number of deals. You have to look at the team, the product, the market opportunity, their ability to execute.
I agree, Paul. I agree
and
with
then
it.
The revenue
I agree.
Will follow.
I agree. Right. I will also tell you some of the most successful B2B SaaS startups I've ever seen in my life came from people. And actually, here's the exact story. They launched an agency. They had 100 customers in that agency. They started realizing every one of those customers was asking for a security product. They said, wow, we should stop doing monthly retainers and be an agency and rather build a software product that helps security. Oh, and by the way, in order to do that, let's go raise our first round of funding by getting those 100 customers that are agency customers to prepay for the concept. And that's how they validate the idea. So
that
you've chosen
all the time. That's,
I know,
that's
you
ridiculous.
Didn't let Paul, you didn't let me finish. That doesn't happen all the time, but it's the best way to validate your idea with a credit card.
Right, but it's extremely rare, and you don't.
It's not rare. It's not rare.
It is rare.
It's not. Paul, I've done 800 of these interviews with CEOs and founders, and I will tell you, it's not rare at all to have people prepay and get validation for the business.
It is rare, first of all. Secondly, actually, MetaCert is almost a spin-out of Cigala, the software testing business, when we actually had a service-based business and we decided to go down the route of technology. But it is extremely rare to get a lot of customers to prepay for something that they haven't got yet. It's ridiculous
not,
for you to say
Paul,
that
I didn't say,
it is ridiculous for you
say,
to say it's not. Hang on, let me
Paul,
finish.
No, because you're putting words in my mouth. I didn't say a lot of people do this, but it is not.
It is not rare.
If you talk, I've interviewed maybe 800 people for the show. You can listen to every interview. I would say larger than 20% of these folks now that have more than a $10 million run rate started by pre-selling. I'm not talking a ton of customers. I'm talking one or two. By pre-selling one or two customers in the form of a professional services contract to actually build their business, their security company, their tool, and that was their first customer. So look, we're running out of time. We're going to disagree on this point. But look, I hope it converts like a crazy amount. I hope you make me eat my words so hard I have to have you back on 20 times and you're going to rub it in my face. All I'm saying is I want to get into your mind about how you're thinking about the building process, the onboarding process, the value process, how you think about users, and I think we got value there. Many of you know I am buying companies that I really, really like, and there's no quicker way for me to get to the bottom of what is happening on that website than using this tool called nathanlacka.com/hotjar, HOTJAR. It basically will give me a recording, okay? When anybody lands on the website, it'll give me a recording of where the viewer is scrolling, and obviously does the basic stuff like heat maps too, but I learn so much about where the users are scrolling and clicking on my site using that tool. It helps me increase conversion rates, make more money, and grow those businesses faster. And we'll have to see what happens with those businesses, but I'm buying them very quick, and I'm using nathanlacka.com/hotjar for all of my website analytics. You can too. I work with them. It's totally free. You can go to nathanlacka.com/hotjar. No credit card required. Again, use it as much as you want. nathanlacka.com/hotjar. I'll see you there. Let's wrap up here with the famous five. These are easy questions. Number one, what's your favorite business book?
It's not a business book, but The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, I think, is a book that I think every business person should read, or everybody, just generally speaking.
Number two, is there a CEO you're following or studying right now?
There are CEOs that are doing things that I learn from some of their mistakes. I would say Jack Dorsey, trying to do too much at the same time. I would say Richard Branson, from how he builds brands and loyalty through his personal brand and his ethics being shown throughout his companies.
And number three, is there a favorite online tool you have, like Acuity Scheduling?
I would say Teamwork and Slack right now.
Number four, how many hours of sleep do you get every night?
Six.
Okay, that's pretty good. And what's your situation? Married, single, do you have kids?
Married, three kids.
Oh, wow. Are they young?
In the Bay Area. My wife is on my board. She's an equity investor. But I want to tell you something before we leave, Nathan. I truly believe that what you say is right, but you need to get it right for the stage of the company. And your argument is right for a lot of companies at different stages, but not at the stage that we're at. I think we're
what is my what would you say my argument is?
you were so focused on getting the revenue. And I think what you need to understand also is that when you focus so early in revenue, that's great, but it doesn't prove diddly squat if you have one or two paying customers. If I
that's
have
false. I disagree with what you just said.
Well, let me finish. If you have one paying customer and I have 50 customers that absolutely love my product,
but pay nothing.
I would pay nothing, but they actually tell everybody they love it and they can't live without it. I would go with those 50 customers every time.
Yeah, I totally look. It's a good debate to have, right? So let's wrap up here again. Three kids, married, and how old are you?
I am 43.
Okay, so last question. Take us back 23 years. What do you wish your 20-year-old self knew?
I was at AOL. I wish I was it 20 years ago. Was I? Yeah. I believe I should have executed my ideas of advertising and booking rooms for hotels when I was at AOL and built my first website. Good. I didn't execute those ideas.
So you would have just started that first business faster.
Ideas, yeah. Anybody can come up with ideas. It's people who have the experience, tenacity, and balls to execute that counts. And unfortunately, I didn't have any of those things back then.
Guys, there you have it from Paul Wash. A heated conversation, but I think a very valuable one with MetaCert. He's had success in the past. He's now launched this company. They've raised about $2.4 million. They have a lot of customers who are paying nothing but really like the tool. He's right now in the beautiful stage of putting up that paywall, seeing if he can get people to convert at about $1.50 per seat. The average customer he's hoping to onboard is somewhere between 300, 400 seats. So call it $500-$600 per month in MR and revenue. Again, we'll see if how it grows. I'd love to have him on again in the future. But Paul, thank you so much for taking us to the top.
Cheers, Nathan. Take care.
If you enjoyed Paul's episode today, go back and listen to Cam yesterday. He and his buddy left JP Morgan, and now they've sold over $600,000 in baby clothes. Why the change?